This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, we have a very full lineup for you. Holly Hilliard will be here. She's chair of the Adult Program Committee to tell us about the new USDF National Education Initiative. And then later on in the program, we'll be hearing from Yana Rumbo, who is the first winner of the USDF's Member of Distinction Award. And then later on in the program, we'll be continuing our education segment with part three, the final part of the series of the Convention Education Session on Joint Health with Alan Mann. That's all to come on the program, but we begin with some news. But first of all, I'd like to remind you that the views of the guests and hosts of this podcast, as always, do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. Now, the first item of news is that the FEI has appointed the grand jury that will be officiating at the 2017 FEI World Cup Finals, which will be held at the CenturyLink Exhibition Center in Omaha, Nebraska, from 29th of March through the 2nd of April this year. And those finals will have Swedish-born American judge Ann Gribbons as president of the grand jury. Also, part of that panel will be Maribel Alonso from Mexico, Mariette Sanders van Ganswinkel from the Netherlands, Katrina Wust from Germany, Andrew Gardner from Great Britain, Raphael Saleh from France, and finally from Denmark, Leif Tonbland. And also the judging supervisory panel working in Omaha with them will include Henk van Bergen from the Netherlands, Uwe Melklem from Germany, and Linda Zhang from here in the USA. The FEI stewards will be Anne Shushko, Lisa Goretta, Walter Bagley, Camille Kopchick, Francis Cross, and the chief steward will be Elizabeth Williams. And again, that final takes place in Omaha, Nebraska, from the 29th of March through April the 2nd. The USDF is launching its National Education Initiative on April the 1st, and the purpose of this new program is to support GMOs in creating and maintaining affordable riding and educational opportunities for adults. And with me now is Holly Hilliard, who is the chair of the Adult Programs Committee, to tell us more about this. So welcome, Holly.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, let's start with a bit of the background and the philosophy behind this new initiative and how it all came about.
Okay. A couple of years ago, the Adult Programs Committee put a survey out to our members. We had doubt that we were reaching and providing the educational opportunities that we were hoping to provide. We didn't feel like we were reaching the members as well as we would like to. So the survey went out and we got a really good response. And indeed, we found that we were not meeting the needs as the members saw it. We found that they wanted education to be more readily available, closer to home, less expensive, that people didn't have the time available to travel to the events that we had been offering. And we really felt like we needed to change the delivery and change the availability in order to meet the needs of the membership. So we went about the process of trying to figure out how we could do that. And we came up with the National Education Initiative and are really excited about launching it at this point.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the format, because there are four event formats within that that can be adapted to specific GMO needs, as I understand it. Let's talk about those different formats, Holly.
Basically, the formats that we're starting with, there's the clinic symposium format, which if you think about the typical riding clinic where people sign up and take a lesson or multiple lessons over the course of a few days with a given instructor, or a symposium that sometimes they have a more targeted format that, or they have specific goals in mind, but that's kind of your typical riding clinic experience. Then there's the ride a test format, which it's exactly what it sounds like. You ride a dressage test and the rider gets the opportunity to get feedback from a judge's perspective. If you are a competitor, you can take that feedback and work to improve your test scores when at your next show. As non-competitors, you get the chance to hear that information that you might not get otherwise. Then there's the adult camp. The adult camps the horse camps are an opportunity for you just to go on a horsey vacation where you just kind of immerse yourself in the time with your horse. Oftentimes, there are multi-day events where the campers stay overnight. There's housing or they camp out where they are, and so you really get to have that total experience. I understand that there are camps that are run. It's a multi-day event, but you don't stay overnight. And then there's the unmounted event that was actually requested by some of the GMOs that gives you an opportunity to still schedule an event for your members that might be in an area where it's too cold to ride in the wintertime, but you still want to have an educational event that you offer. And so the formats then, again, of a typical clinic, a ride a test camp, or an unmounted event. And if a GMO or a GMO chapter has an idea for an event, USDF staff support will help you make that event fit into one of those four categories at this point. Now, those categories may expand in the future, but for now, that's where we're starting.
So the GMO then would actually initiate this and plan it and facilitate it within that form, one of those formats then, Holly. But there's backup and support and advertising and all the rest of it from the USDF itself. So it's a combined effort in terms of the promotion and the organization.
Absolutely. We've tried to make this as flexible a program as possible. So we've tried to build in enough flexibility so that if a GMO in Nebraska, for instance, has an idea for an event that they'd like to put on, while we do have some basic requirements so that we can ensure that the quality of the education is there, we've also will attempt to be very, very flexible in format of the actual event. And USDF will help with providing templates for people that haven't organized a clinic in the past. We're putting together templates for budgets and templates for schedules so that they can pull that information off the website and help them get their event off the ground. There'll also be some educational materials. If they need them, we can supply them because we already have all that information available. The support is there to help them organize and get their event off the ground and be successful in it. But at the same time, we don't want to dictate exactly what is done.
Right. So there's that flexibility too. And again, this is targeted at that population that the USDF feels may have been underserved in the past, and offering them that high quality instruction and educational content that will bring them in line, you know, with the progress that the USDF continues to make in education. That, I think, would be possibly the key message here then, Holly, in terms of the deliverables that come through this brand new program.
That's our hope. We strongly believe that there's a quality of education that USDF has come to be known for through our membership, and we want to maintain that standard. And where we found through the survey results and talking with people, we found that people that were in more remote locations, or even if they were in a fairly well-populated area, but they have families and they have a business of their own and it's more difficult for them to get away, travel, you know, for any distance and be away for several days, they didn't have the opportunities available to them. And we felt like by providing maybe smaller educational events, but more of them in a given area would open opportunities to people that hadn't had them in the past. We're hoping that by, instead of one event in every region every 2 years, which was the format for the adult clinics, the series that are just completing, we're hoping that this might make it possible for there to be four or five events in an area every year, and thereby make it more affordable and more available to more people.
Well, I'm sure there are GMOs listening to this, Holly, who are going to say, yes, but what's it going to cost us? And they're going to be delighted to know that there are grants available for this. Talk us through the funding then, Holly, if you would.
That was one of the most exciting parts of the whole program, is the ability to provide grants to help fund these programs because our two main objectives, one of them was to increase the amount of educational offerings and make them more available to a greater number of people. And the second one was to make them affordable. And so the grant have been set up so that we can offer in the first year. We have 27 $1,000 grants available. The objective is that you apply, you have a program, you apply for the grant. You have a National Education Initiative program, not just any program, but one of the programs for the National Education Initiative. You can apply for a grant. The grants will be available with, there's guidelines, of course, but what we're hoping is that they are going to be distributed in a, with regional diversity, so that not any one area is going to have an over concentration of funds available. We're trying to make sure that they're distributed nationwide. They will be reviewed for attempts by the GMO or the hosting organization to make the program affordable for their members based on what the needs are in that area. So if it's mostly an area that has mostly lower level riders, then hopefully they can bring in some clinicians that will meet the needs of those riders in that area. If it's an area that is mostly upper level riders, we have the flexibility built in that they can still offer a program and make it more affordable to the riders that maybe didn't have the funds available personally to ride with an upper level caliber instructor, that hopefully we can increase the availability of that education to people at all levels in all areas.
Right. Now, how do people apply? Who is the point of contact to find out more about this initiative, Holly, and apply for a grant?
On the USDF website, there's actually a National Education Initiative page that they can go to that has lots of information on it. The applications won't be ready or available on the website until sometime in February, so it's coming up very soon. But all the information about the initiative is up now, the general information. Grant applications and initiative applications for the events will be available starting in February. So if they've looked, they can just continue to check back until we get all that stuff online. The Education Department at USDF office is available to answer questions. And of course, they can always reach out to a member, the Adult Programs Committee, and those names and contact information can be found on the USDF website also. But the page for the education initiative on the website already has a fair amount of information on it.
Well, for listeners who are thinking, oh gosh, this is exciting, in my region I could potentially, you know, enjoy a symposia that I haven't had the opportunity of before, or ride a test, and, you know, all of these opportunities, how do I get involved?
The best way to start is to go onto the USDF website right now and look for the National Education Initiative page. There's a tab at the bottom. It's under education. Look for the page. Get some basic information there. And then it needs to be, the host or the sponsor of the event needs to be either a USDF GMO, or group member organization, or a chapter of that GMO. And get together with your officers and figure out what kind of a program you want to offer. Then on the website, there's a list of instructors, because we do have requirements to ensure the quality of the education that is delivered. So you'd look for an instructor and have your program idea, and then you can either follow the steps on the website or contact USDF, contact the Education Department, and they will help you walk through getting yourself started.
Wonderful. And is there anything else you feel our listeners should be aware of with this initiative, Holly, before I let you go?
I think the thing that we really want to stress is that the goal of the program was to make quality education available to riders of all levels in all areas of the country. And our belief is that our members will understand that and really work to produce those kinds of programs, help them to be able to become more involved in the sport.
Well, again, that is the USDF's brand new National Education Initiative, which is being launched on April 1st. And as Holly said, there will be more information on the website at usdf.org. And Holly, again, is the chair of the Adult Programs Committee. Holly, thank you for joining us today and telling us about this.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
And as well as information on the website, of course, you can find out more by emailing directly to education@usdf.org. And our next guest is Jana Rumbau, who's here to tell us how it feels to be the first winner of the USDF Member of Distinction Award. Jana is an adult amateur rider who's been a role model to amateurs, professionals and juniors in many capacities. And she was actually the founding creator of the Palm Beach Derby some 30 years ago, which is not only the longest standing CDI in Florida, but also one of the longest running CDIs in the United States, which has earned her the nickname of Wellington's First Lady of Dressage. Jana, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Love to be here.
And congratulations on being the first recipient of this USDF Member of Distinction Award. Tell us, Jana, what this actually means to you.
Oh, I'm so humbled and of course, very, very honored to be the first one to receive that award. And because it has so many aspects to it, which I feel very, very honored. And of course, I'm thrilled. At the same time, I'm humbled and a little bit nervous about it, because you feel that so many other people might deserve it much, much more than me. So it was a great honor.
Now, we should explain that you're now 72 years of age, you're an adult amateur and have been for a number of years and still riding three horses a day. So what does that involve in terms of your riding as an amateur and your competition ambitions at this age?
Well, I qualified for the finals again with my two horses in both in Prix St. George. I won Grand Prix and I really intended to go, but unfortunately, my husband was not feeling well, so I had to stay home. And I'm going to try to do it next year, and I'm showing Junior Grand Prix and Grand Prix Freestyle this season again. And my other one, I hope to move up to Grand Prix as well, the one that Prix St. George and I won. And then I have a young one that's kind of naughty, but I'm still hanging on.
Well, you certainly are, but let's reflect on the career, if you will, your dressage career, and how this all began, because you were the founding creator of the Palm Beach Derby, and some 30 years ago, which is the longest standing CDI in Florida, I believe. And how did that come about? What was the catalyst for that, Jana?
Well, it was that we were several people here in Florida that started the circuit. And we started the circuit every 14 days because there was nobody who could stable anybody. So they started up in Jacksonville to Valhalla to Melbourne to Orlando to West Palm Beach to Sarasota down to Miami and then way back. That's how we started it all. And then there was a wonderful girl in Orlando that called Kit Young. We all thought we ought to do something more special and do a CDI. And we got permission to do that. And then we raised the money and the Fed campers who bought the piece of land out there, we asked the Palm Beach Polo not to have any dressage. So we would try to make that a full dressage center and white fences. And that's how we all started it. That was a big prize money. I think in the whole world for dressage at that time, $25,000.
Well, you've had quite the career, and I use that in inverted commas because you are an adult amateur, but you've already won the bronze, silver, and gold medals of the USDF, as well as the USDF silver and gold freestyle bar, and several other awards. Jana, that really is quite distinctive for an adult amateur. How did this all begin for you? Remind us where dressage came into your life.
Well, I used to be a jumper, and in Denmark, we always had to do, you know, dressage, which is called, you know, it's just basic riding, dressage up to fourth level, really, kind of. And so we all had to do that. And then when I stopped jumping, then I went into the dressage. At the same time, I had a dressage horse that I used to show Prix St. George and I won. And then I used to jump it open jumper on Wednesday and Thursday here. And he could do both, and that's years ago. And I just continue riding because my body never gave up. So I just do it and love it. And I ride my own horses. Nobody else rides my horses.
What have been your highlights then of your riding career, Jana, when you look back and you're in the rearview mirror now at what you've done so far? Because it's involved, I think, over 1,300 tests and 20 horses, which is pretty impressive, but there must have been some high
points
for you.
But that's only the last 25 years.
Well,
yeah, but I used to do even before because USDF, I had a different name and they didn't make any records, and I'm sure it's even more than that.
Right. Okay, so look, we're just looking at that 25 years then. Is that where what you would consider the high point of your riding career in the recent 25 years, Jana? And what would have been those high points?
Well, my high point was really with Junior. 2 years in a row, he was reserve in the Grand Prix at the finals, and then he won the freestyle because this horse, I bred him and trained him all the way up, and he is a very, very difficult horse. He's not an easy horse, and for me, that's has really been my highlight, that I have been able to train this horse and go through every single level with this horse to get to the top. And I never moved up before I had 70% or more up the level. But he has been very, very difficult, and he's still difficult. Every day he's difficult. And for me, that is the highlight in my career, that I've been able to do that with that horse.
Do you have a bucket list, Jana, now in the sport of dressage?
Yes, I do. My bucket list is I want to see if I can go back to the finals next year and win the Grand Prix with Junior. That's my bucket list.
And as you go forward to obviously aim for the next goal in the sport, what do you most look forward to every day about the training process, Jana?
Love the training of my horses. Love to be with them. Love to have a program. Make them happy. You know, they are turned out in the morning. I ride them. After I ride them, they're turned out. They're allowed to be dirty. You know, I just love the whole aspect of training them. And every day, you know, there's always a challenge in a way to make them happy. And certain days, we just go for a hack and we do some of the work outside to keep them happy and keep them muscled, and I love to see the development of the muscles, and I've been pretty lucky because I have to touch wood, because I've been very lucky. I have no lame horses.
All right.
Had no trouble.
All right, so a busy winter season and 2017 to qualify for the US Dressage Finals. Jana, and I think at this point probably in your life, you reflect on all the high points, all the fond memories and the awards that you've won. And if you look at now this Member of Distinction, this inaugural award by the USDF, how does that compare with what you've done and what you've won in your life? Where would you put this?
Well, this is such a big honor that they recognize me, because this is a little bit more all around. It's not just for riding, but it's for, you know, you have been involved with the sport and support the sport, and that is for me is really kind of the highlight. That is ultimate. It's such a great honor. Such a great honor.
Wonderful.
Because it really is. I'm so thrilled and so humbled by that they chose me to be the first one.
Well, congratulations again.
Big thank you. And, you know, it gives you the chills or the goose pimples when you think about it.
I'm sure it does. Well, congratulations again. And thank you so much for coming on the program, Jana.
Well, thank you very much.
And there's more information about this new national award on the USDF website at usdf.org by clicking on the Roma Foundation USDF Hall of Fame. And finally, in our education segment, we have the final part of the three-part series taken from the convention education session on joint health, which was presented by Luitpold Pharmaceuticals Director of the Animal Health Division, Alan Mann.
So when you think about treating joints, you know, the economics come into play. Okay, what are the treatment options? But ultimately, what do you want to do? What are you trying to accomplish here, right? So we want to get rid of pain and try to get them that joint as healthy as possible, as quickly as possible. But we also want to do it in such a way that we're actually helping the horse and just not masking, you know, the problem. And this is critical. You really want to make sure that you're trying to get to the problem as quickly as possible so that you don't end up having osteoarthritis occur. Because once that happens, it's just it's going to be a constant problem and a headache to be dealing with. So we get rid of the inflammation, the synovitis, which is that membrane that becomes inflamed, or capsulitis, which is just an inflammation of the joint capsule. So the sooner we can get this under control, the less chance we have of cartilage damage. But remember, those destructive forces that have been released, we have to figure out how we're going to deal with those as well, so we can shut them down without causing any further damage. We have to deal with the symptoms, but we also want to deal with the disease. You got to get rid of the pain and inflammation, but you also have to deal with the problem. So that's the goal of treatment. So, you know, ideally, that cartilage that doesn't have a whole lot of substance to it, we want to make sure that we can stop the disease process. So those cells, that 2% for the average number of forces out here, that we can protect those cells. And then when we talk about stimulation production of cartilage matrix, basically we're allowing those cartilage cells to work more efficiently in that healthy, normal environment. And we want to improve the viscosity of the joint fluid. That's important. And ultimately, get rid of the pain and inflammation. Now, you know, how this happens, I mean, typically, you want to try to get rid of the pain and reduce some of the inflammation initially. But these other three are so critical in returning the environment to a normal, healthy, functioning, balanced joint. So, again, we're focusing on hyaluronic acid, NSAIDs, and corticosteroids, along with Adequan. You know, corticosteroids and NSAIDs, they do a wonderful job of reducing the pain and inflammation. So there's nothing wrong with using them. It's what else are you doing? So when we look at hyaluronic acid, you know, the added benefit here is that it's able to improve the quality of the joint fluid. So if we had a joint that's been compromised by hyaluronidase, now by using a product like Legend, whether you give it intra-articularly or systemically, you're going to benefit the joint environment by improving the quality of the hyaluronic acid that's going to, you know, improve the viscosity. So you've really helped by using a product like Legend. The challenge here is that if those destructive forces have gone on into the cartilage and have started to break down the cartilage, this isn't really going to have any impact on those destructive enzymes. The greatest attribute that Adequan has, and it's the only FDA-approved product out there that has it, it has the ability to target what's causing the damage and shut down those destructive forces. The reduction of inflammation and pain are almost a byproduct of its ability to stop the disease process. It almost works in reverse. So non-steroidals and corticosteroids, they really reduce the pain and inflammation almost immediately. Adequan is focusing on what's caused the problem, not the symptoms. That's one of the reasons when we talk about our treatment regime, which is to give a shot every 4 days for 7 treatments. So in the course of a month, you're going to have a therapeutic level of drug in the horse's system. It's so that we can get that joint back to that balanced, functioning joint, so that the chondrocytes can work efficiently, so that the synovial sites can continue to produce better quality joint fluid. And that's really what Adequan is all about. It's getting the joint back to a normal, healthy, functioning environment. The whole goal of Adequan is to return the joint environment to a healthy place so that it can work in a normal functioning manner. Yeah, so, you know, we are an approved drug that does have quite a bit of science to support it. You know, it does do some wonderful things, but, you know, this is key. It really stops the disease process. And hopefully, before there's much damage done to the cartilage. That is really the greatest attribute of this drug. Okay, so we're going to take So you give it into muscle, it goes to all the joints, it gets through the synovial membrane, it permeates the cartilage, it's there in therapeutic levels, you get an accumulation of the drug so that it can stop these disease processes and return the joint to its natural environment. So we stop the destructive cycle, that's key. As a result, we're reducing pain and decreasing inflammation because we shut off the fire and we restored even synovial lubrication. And when we talk about stimulating the cartilage process, we're just giving those chondrocytes the ability to work in a healthier environment. So we're not really stimulating them, we're just making them work in a more friendly environment. So this was a study that we did because when Adequan IM first came out, people wanted to know, how do you know what it's doing? So we did a radio-labeled study, and we found that within 2 hours intramuscularly, it gets to the joint peak levels, the joint fluid. This was really interesting. Within 48 hours, it stimulated the synoviocytes, those cells that produce the joint fluid, to the point where it almost doubled the hyaluronic acid concentration. So it's having an impact on improving the viscosity of the joint fluid as well. And within 48 hours, it reached peak levels in the cartilage. It's such a small molecule, it can go everywhere. And this study even found that it got down into the underlying subchondral bone in therapeutic levels as well. And this study showed that for 96 hours we had a therapeutic level. They did 96 hours because this was a study done after the product was approved, and the treatment regime of every 4 days or 96 hours, we're just kind of showing that we know for 96 hours we have a therapeutic level. So if you give a shot every 4 days, you're going to maintain a therapeutic level throughout the entire month of treatment. The takeaway from this is if you're doing the series, do the whole thing before you make evaluation. Don't just base it on the first few treatments. So, you know, we are an FDA-approved product, and there's a litany of reasons why you want to always deal with FDA-approved products because of we know they're effective, we know they're safe. We are always held to high standards with the active ingredient. Our manufacturing facilities are constantly under scrutiny by FDA. So when it's all said and done, you gotta find these problems as soon as you can. You have to recognize that Adequan can fix a lot of problems, but once cartilage is damaged, it can't fix that. So sooner versus later. So the more you know about the health and well-being of your horses and what to do and how to really stay plugged into what's going on in their life, the greater enjoyment you'll get from these wonderful animals.
And our thanks again to Alan Mann, who is Director of the Animal Health Division at Leupold Pharmaceutical. Now, if you missed the previous two parts of this three-part series, you'll find them on the USDF podcast either on iTunes or by clicking the link on the top of the front page on the USDF website at usdf.org on the icon for podcasts, and that will take you to the previous two episodes which featured this series. And a final reminder that the USDF has announced Willie Arts and Michael Brangdall will be the instructors for the 2017 USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum. This will feature a live forum approach and provide a correct fundamental system for starting sport horse prospects. And the program is for anyone with the goal of developing a consistent training foundation for sport horse prospects as they progress from in hand to under saddle. And the dates for this year's forum are May the 13th and the 14th at Isabella Farms in Cypress, Texas. You'll find more information on the USDF website, as always, at usdf.org, or you can email us directly at sporthorse@usdf.org. And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget you can download this podcast from the iTunes podcast store to any mobile device so you can listen to the show on the go. These podcasts are bi-weekly, and you can find out when the latest episode is live by following us on social media. Just look for United States Dressage Federation, the official page on Facebook and on Twitter. And as usual, to find more information about the content from these podcasts, you can go to the eTrack section of the website at usdf.org. So until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.